Well, to close out today's show, here's Bill to talk with Bob Peterson, who was active in the Milwaukee Association of Teachers during the struggle to save public unions against the anti-labor campaign of Governor Scott Walker a couple years ago. Here's Bill.
Yeah, in fact, Clayton, he led the way, president of the during that great assault on teachers. Bob Peterson, welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Bob Peterson taught fifth grade in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for 30 years. He was, again, the president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association through the most difficult period of fighting the right-wing legislature and government and governor as they attempted to destroy all unions, but particularly the teachers. He also co-founded the organization Rethinking Schools and was an editor. It's a wonderful magazine. He writes and speaks a lot. Through the years of struggle, he's really in demand as a speaker because through the years of struggle in Wisconsin, the union was in many ways weakened, but in many ways it grew stronger and showed the way to the new teacher unionism that is now emerging around the country. So, Bob Peterson, do you miss your fifth? Well, before we get to the business, do you miss your fifth graders?
I do very much so. I had so much interaction with fifth graders over the 30 years, and not only just teaching and learning from them, but sharing with them the need for us all to be concerned with social justice issues. My kids organized clubs against the war, the Iraq war, clubs to save the neighborhood swimming pool and to save their library. And I believe now that more than ever that students need to be encouraged to speak up and act.
Yeah, and with their parents, I understand, in your school.
Oh, yeah, the parents, I like to think of schools as the greenhouses of democracy. That's what we should have them as, both how they run internally and what they stand for, with parents, teachers, and students united to get justice in our community and the greater world.
Yeah, I guess that's why they elected you president for all those very tough years, because you had that vision. Anyway, Bob, let's get down to the current struggles. Tell us about Wisconsin and teaching and what happened to the unions in Wisconsin and also the recent Supreme Court decision, Janus, which was anticipated in Wisconsin by, 6 or 8 years by the Wisconsin legislature, and even worse than Janus. And then we can get how the teachers' union survived and in many ways strengthened. But first, you know, what happened?
Yeah, well, in Wisconsin, as you said, it was at Act 10. It was the spring of 2011, and Walker, to quote his own words, dropped a bomb on public sector workers. You know, he has since then attacked private sector workers, even though at the time he said he wasn't going to. But basically, what happened in Wisconsin, Act 10, is sort of Janus on steroids, Janus being the Supreme Court ruling that you mentioned that prohibits now unions from collecting agency fees for people who don't join the union but benefit from the union. I call them freeloaders. But anyway, in Wisconsin, we lost that right, the agency fee issue, but we also lost the right to collectively bargain. Bargaining could only include base wage increases, not to exceed the cost of living. When I was president, that was for 2 years, it was 0% cost of living increases, so that was all we could bargain. We also lost the right to dues checkoff, like, so instead of having it deducted from a payroll check, we had to go out and individually ask people for their bank account number. And on top of that, they have instituted a recertification program, which means every year we have to pay money, actually, to have the state run a recertification election for our union, and anybody who doesn't vote is considered a no vote. So it's not 51% of those people who vote or 50% plus one. It is actually 51% of the entire unit that you're trying to represent. So we were really challenged post Act 10, and the prediction was that the unions would basically disappear. Now, the fact is, some unions did almost disappear, and the amount of money that unions could contribute to, say, think tanks, progressive think tanks, and candidates did decline, which was certainly one of the goals of the Republicans. But the fact of the matter is, there was a silver lining to this, which is people really got pissed off. People who protested came back to their hometown saying, look, we're not going to let Walker or anybody else destroy our unions. And in many cases, we started rethinking how unions should operate, because quite frankly, unions had been defined so narrowly in the minds of members. You negotiate a contract, you enforce that contract, and sort of a business style union. If you had a problem, you called up the staff person, like you call up an insurance agent. And so our approach was what we called social justice unionism, and an organizing model where you really get elected leaders and members very active in both determining policy in the union and implementing them.
Yeah, and you were quite successful in Milwaukee in many ways in the social justice unionism and in what you called not collective bargaining but collective action. Let me give a station ID and reintroduce you, and then we'll get into how you succeeded to some extent in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin, and how that contributed to so many of this emerging struggles in West Virginia and Arizona and Kentucky and Oklahoma, all right the work states, incidentally, where the unions had were not allowed, in fact, to get mandatory dues from their members. So this is the OMO Variety Hour. Bill Resnick here. I'm talking to Bob Peterson, 30 years a fifth grade teacher, co-founder of the organization Rethinking Schools, president then of the Milwaukee Teachers Union, in its years battling for teachers and students, being the assault on them by the right wing. We've discussed the right wing strategy and what they did in Wisconsin, which was in fact more draconian, much more draconian. In fact, Bob, I'm not sure why didn't they go at teacher tenure, and or did they? We'll talk about that. The right wing won a lot of battles. It's not at all clear right now that, and we're showing signs that the right wing might in fact be losing the war, or could well lose the war. So tell us again, tell us how you fought back in Milwaukee and the gains that you made, and particularly the gains in building a different kind of union.
Right. And so what actually, when we got elected, it was me and a number of progressive people on our executive board, we did a campaign to reimagine our union. And we said we had to reimagine it in different ways. One is with the decline of collective bargaining, we had to replace that with collective action. We had to involve our membership in a much more different way. Our communications had to improve, their involvement and committee possibilities had to improve, their activities had to improve. And that meant a lot of one-on-one conversations in building the capacity of our local school leaders, we call them building representatives, to organize within their own buildings. But the sort of the conception of the union also changed from one that just focused on bread and butter issues and was sort of staff driven to one that was what we call social justice union, that had three central components or legs, like legs of a stool. You can't have a stool with two legs or one leg. One leg, though, is bread and butter issues. Obviously, unions have to look out for their members, and that's an important thing. A second leg is basically pedagogy. We have to take responsibility for what's going on in our classrooms, and we have to promote amongst our members and publicly in terms of policy things that will allow us professionals to reclaim our classroom, to end this obsession with standardized testing and scripted curriculum, and really promote student-focused learning where kids are engaged in projects and really looking at the world. And then the third leg of the stool is social justice. So we have to stand for social justice both within our schools but also within our community. We can't think that if we just look out for our own selves, and this is true of all public sector workers and in fact private sector workers too, that our interests are not just bound up in our members but in the whole entire working class and oppressed communities in our neighborhoods, and we have to stand with them. So we got involved in a variety of union coalitions and encourage our members to participate in everything from securing immigrant rights in our schools through a sanctuary movement to supporting the Black Lives Matters struggles in Milwaukee, supporting other workers who are on strike, like immigrant workers at a pizza factory and the local transit workers. And in so doing, not just having two people from the leadership go out and make a speech, but really getting people involved and tying our struggle to their struggle. What that has occurred, I mean, there's some simple things. I mean, a lot of people, you know, were about to give up at the end of Act 10 when all that went down. And we took it little bit by little bit, whether it was increasing teacher time, so planning time, because we lost a lot of that immediately following Act 10, or like one thing we demanded was that each that there be a daily mandatory playtime, uninterrupted playtime for a four-year-old and five-year-old kindergarten.
Yeah, Bob, that was so interesting. I read it. So amazing. They were just grinding at kids with their little formulas and absurd rote learning, and they didn't even have a playtime for 4 and 5 year olds. I mean, there's something Dickensian about that.
It seems crazy that
you have to fight for that.
Right. And in fact, we did. It was a collective fight. It was with parents. It was with professional, you know, university people who know about early child education, of course, teachers and paraprofessionals, and were just outraged. But it's a symptom of what's going on in this country still. I mean, we test kids more than any other country in the world, and our curriculum is driven by these corporate textbooks and corporate texting companies. And most, unfortunately, many school boards and administrators have swallowed the Kool-Aid and think that's the only way you can assess our students. I'm all for making sure we have a rigorous curriculum and kids learn a lot, but this is not working the way we're doing. So anyway, so we mobilized people around those professional issues, and that brought people back into our union and wanted and made people real advocates for us. We have also, you know, continued to recently the administration was going to cut all schools' budgets by 5%. The union under new leadership now, you know, I'm retired from that. They protested and got that completely restored, and instead pushed the school board and worked with progressive school board members to cut from the top and cut millions of dollars off of the central office administration in order to fund the schools. Now, obviously, the biggest problem is the state. Right now in Wisconsin, we're looking at a November election and trying to get rid of Walker. There's no term limits for governors in Wisconsin. And if he continues, it's going to be a real war here. Hopefully, we'll be able to replace him with somebody who, well, anybody would be better. Anyway.
Let's talk about the teachers, and we only have a couple more minutes. The Wisconsin Spirit actually was one of those precursors to what happened in West Virginia and so many other states.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, and give us a sense of how, let's say, the Boston teachers and their struggles and other teachers in other cities, in Chicago in particular, have reached out to their communities.
Right. I think what's really exciting right now in the teacher union movement is the sort of both established union leaders and rank and file are rising up. I know that the Chicago teachers unions were inspired by the uprising in Wisconsin in 2011. They went on to have a very successful strike where they united with parents. Teachers in Seattle did the same a couple of years later. Teacher leaders in Boston, Raleigh, North Carolina, Los Angeles have become real leaders in this vision of social justice unionism. And then on top of it, obviously, this spring, we saw rank and file in what are called red or purple states just saying enough is enough. And it was both economic and all this crap in terms of testing and control of the teachers' lives. And they rose up. And ultimately, I think in most of those states, the unions got on board and were helpful. But it indicated to me that the unions should have been doing more just from the beginning. But it also, and most importantly, it shows the power of organized rank and file members. And a lot of them continue to be involved. Some have formed caucuses to push their union leadership to stand with not only teachers, all teachers, but also other staff at schools and the community in demanding that schools be adequately funded. Because a lot of this is this direct attack on schools by those people who would like to destroy public education, whether it's the oil interests in Oklahoma or coal interests in West Virginia. They have no interest in promoting quality public education, and that's true nationwide.
Bob, tell us we have a minute, Rethinking Schools, your recent article that's on the Rethinking right. Schools blog is well worth reading.
Right.
Also, I want to urge you not to retire from the struggle.
I won't. Yes, our new issue of Rethinking Schools, our summer issue, actually has three articles about the teacher struggle. One is mine, Transforming Teacher Unions in a Post-Janus World. That's available right now if you go to Rethinking Schools blog. But there's also an article about the struggle in Puerto Rico, and there's another article about the going into depth about the uprisings in the red states in Virginia and West Virginia and North Carolina and so on and so forth. So, yeah, go to rethinkingschools.org. We need subscribers, and please check us out, but view us as part of the movement for educational justice, because we are and will continue and will work with people throughout the country.
Yeah, let me give you a brief 10-second promo. For teachers or parents, Rethinking Schools has the most interesting curriculums and books that you can imagine in terms of rethinking not just schools, but the whole of American history that they reinterpreted. These are wonderful books and done very well. Thank you so much, Bob.
Well, thank you.
Right. So long.
Take care. Bye-bye.